Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon once again, as we have been for the last 10.5 years. This is our 11th season. Yeah, I've got that right. And after a weekend of Six Nations rugby, of England Saxons rugby, kinda, and oh, I don't know, is there anything else? A bit of top 14 maybe?
Under 20s, top 14, Super Rugby kicked off.
Yeah, there you go. All of that jazz.
Goodness me.
All of that jazz. So if you, wherever you get your podcast, hit subscribe. That's just one really easy way. Doesn't cost you anything, doesn't take you any time, but you can show your appreciation, make sure you don't miss anything. And you can do likewise by going to patreon.com/eggchasers for more extra content. You will find JB, who's right there. Hello.
Hello, Tim.
You'll find JB at Beardmore and Beardmore and Beardmore.
Beardmore and Co. Independent Financial Advisors. That's where you'll find me.
Beardmore Cube Financial Advisors.
Advising hard every day.
Yeah. You'll find...
Or follow me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to find me.
You'll find Phil at Sale Harriers Running Track, doing some running on Monday nights, probably. Is that tomorrow night's plan?
I am hoping to have my first track session in about 6 months tomorrow night.
Is that because you've been injured?
Because I've been injured.
Do it. How?
It was still the hangover from the charity game, the Sedgley Legends game that we played in over 12 months ago.
14 months ago.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yes, and my ankle is hopefully, touch wood, ready for a track session tomorrow, a light track session tomorrow.
And you'll find me on the fastest growing rugby YouTube channel in the UK, maybe in the world.
Let's just talk about your YouTube channel.
70,000 subscribers I've gone past now.
Fair play.
Awesome.
Mate. So, this week, I know that our email account is a joint email account. You could stay... in South Africa, every single day in a different house for 20 years. That's how many offers you've got from South Africans to stay in their houses.
Well, I'm coming to South Africa in June, July for the Ireland South Africa test, and in August, September for New Zealand South Africa. So, all offers of help.
You need more, do you?
All offers of help are welcome. Whether that's just a bit of local knowledge, whether that's... a local rugby club to come and enjoy some hospitality in, a very wealthy listener who wants to sponsor the trip.
Or the podcast.
Yeah, too right. Anyway, we've got lots to talk about, but let's start with the Six Nations. How much did you enjoy the weekend's rugby?
It's okay. I mean, it wasn't the best weekend of Six Nations rugby, but it was okay. I've got to say, on Friday evening, a good barometer of how much I'm looking forward to it is how excited I am driving back from Wales. And I was very excited about these games. I thought the two games on Saturday were something to look forward to. Broadly speaking, they were, I thought.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed today's actions, the Sunday game, France versus Italy, far more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I was wondering whether we just start at the very end.
I've not watched it, boys.
Let me and Phil take you through it. And let's just... Well, we can loop back around the 80 minutes itself, but the end. So did you see or hear the way it ended?
I heard there's a penalty missed.
13 points all. Italy managed to win a penalty. France are going from it inside their own 22 to try and go for the win.
France, who've got 14 men on the pitch.
14 men on the pitch because of an earlier red card just before half-time to Jonathan Donti. And Zuliani?
I think it was Zuliani.
Wins a turnover in a very kickable position, about 40 metres out, just 10 metres to the left of one of the posts.
Yep.
And Garbisi's lining it up.
Garbisi, who's slotted a touchline conversion.
Touchline conversion after Capoazzo's
try.
5 minutes,
10 minutes before that.
So this is well within his range. And bearing in mind, this is in a stadium with the roof closed in Lille.
Oh, my word.
No wind. And the 10 seconds to go left on the shot clock, and the ball falls over.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So the ball falls over, and you look at the shot clock, and it's like 10, 9. So he just had to stand it up.
Oh, no.
Take
and
three
it,
steps
and
back.
And it hit the post.
And swing.
I did see some remarkably stupid comments about this on Twitter, actually. One of my favourite comments from one of my least favourite rugby pundits, who's not even a rugby pundit, he's like he's somehow this like barrister who ends up commenting on things and catastrophising things, claimed that this draw, this is the match which would put to bed forever the nonsense of Italy getting relegated. One game puts to bed a conversation forever about the future, forever, regardless of what happens in the future. It's no wonder, is it, the legal profession is so screwed when these are the brightest minds that they have to offer. The same guy who, this is exactly the same guy who on Twitter the other week said something like, I think it's a Jim Hamilton quote or something about the laws. This is why ex-players should not be involved in writing the laws for rugby. Like, who should be? Some solicitors? Like, who is it? Who is the game there to serve? Solicitors?
The only people I'd want more involved in making the laws than ex-players would be current players.
Yeah. No, 15-year-old boys. 15-year-old boys know what they want from rugby. Yeah. And that's who should be making the laws. Is it exciting to a 15-year-old boy? Yes, it is. Then that's what we shall do.
Well, I agree with you that that's a slightly ludicrous, hyperbolic statement, but I...
This puts the one game to bed forever.
That is ridiculous.
A debate, which will last for time.
What I will say is it would have made the most incredible weekend for Italy, whose under-20s beat France on their own patch.
Oh,
the world champion
under-20s.
They
smashed them in the scrum. Did you see the highlights?
Yeah. What I loved was the one of the forwards belting out Ness and Dormer in the dressing room afterwards.
That was incredible. Yeah, that Amazing. Showed up on one of my feeds. Somehow, I'm on like a rugby Reddit thread. I've never been on Reddit, but because
go on there, mate.
I never intend to, right? But my phone knows that I like rugby and therefore sends me highlights if there's like a video or something that might be of interest to me on Reddit. It sends me these videos. I don't know how it knows, but it knows. It sent me that one.
It's a nice service.
Yeah, it is, actually. It's like all of the good bits of Reddit without actually having to read it or contribute to it.
So Italy's defence is vastly improved. That's what Gonzalo Quesada has achieved in the short space of time with Italy. Their attack, not quite as potent as it was, but they showed a lot of heart and dog, and they will feel gutted not to have got a win.
Gonzalo Quesada,
former head coach of Stade Francais.
Yep.
Do you know where he was a fly-half for many a year?
Argentina.
Argentina.
Not his club site. Not his club scene, though, is it? I remember him playing. I think they played in orange, or they either played in the orange or green.
Orange or green? Free State?
No.
Some French team?
Narbonne.
Narbonne, okay.
I remember playing at Narbonne back in the day.
What was I going to say? Yeah, so but we can briefly have a... I think we should get on to other games. We can always come back to this one. But just France, what is going on? How have they fallen off a cliff so much?
Yeah.
It's the France. I mean, what kind of question is this?
that's the old Brian Moy. You never know which French team to turn up. but we kind of thought we'd got past that stage because they are not the French team of old. Or we thought they weren't the French team of old. We thought they were consistently one of the best teams in the world. And post-World Cup hangover, whatever you want to call it, whether it is the attrition rate of the top 14 or whether it's just losing a couple of the world's best players in DuPont and Entermac.
Flamont, Meafu's not there.
Yeah.
But Jalonch.
I would always question how good a team is if you rely on, like...
I totally agree.
...total stars.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is personnel, because at the World Cup, they didn't have DuPont for a couple of the pool games and they smashed everyone in front of them.
Well, they put 60 points on Italy.
On Italy.
In the World Cup, in the group stage, on this Italy.
Exactly. What seems to be going on, from what I can gather, inferring what some people have said and some people that have contacted me that are actually in France and sort of more connected with what the media are saying, Galtier's got rid of all of his backroom staff, including Ibanez, who was basically the sort of conduit between him and the players, and he brought the soft skills. Galtier lives in the extremes.
Well, doesn't Jim Hamilton describe him as a cowboy?
I don't know.
So he was, Galtier was in charge. I'm sure, did Jim go to Montpellier? Have I made
yeah.
that?
Yeah, yeah, that rings
so.
A bell.
So there's one story he told, I think it was in like the Times back in the day, when he was first getting into the media. Galtier was in charge of the ship there. Mm-hmm. And Jim is trying to institute some sort of fitness thing with the rower. Everyone hated it so much that the next time he got in the rower, someone had actually cut the wires to the Concept 2 so he couldn't use it. Which is like, that's not a healthy atmosphere, is it, boys? Sabotaging the gym.
Sabotaging the rower, your exercise equipment. Yeah.
So the forward coach has gone. The Ibanez, who I think was a very important person for the whole atmosphere. And the one.
So was Ibanez doing kind of like the Richard Hill rule in this England team?
I think.
Richard Hill is the team manager.
Yeah.
But he kind of interfaces between
managers.
I don't think he was team manager in the sense that, like, there's your kit, here's where we're getting
That's kind of what I think a team manager is.
He wasn't that type of team manager.
Gets the bus organised.
No.
He was one of the coaches. He was, I think he might have been kind of Galtier's. He always was like Galtier's number two, if you like. But anyway, I think one of his key roles was kind of the soft skill people management stuff. Anyway, what was really interesting, I don't know if you saw Sean Edwards' post-match interview.
I've not, no.
One of the things he said, that Topsiojo said to him, "Could you put your finger on what's going on with France?" And Sean Edwards went, "Well, the defence is good."
Ooh, that's that's very Dorian West, that is.
Yeah.
Well, the lineup's good, is it?
Yeah, which, righto. I mean, he went on and talked about, I think we just need to do this with the attack and stuff. But the fact that he sort of went, the job I'm doing is great, says to me, like, they feel like there's an axe about to swing, which is not, that doesn't seem, and the fact, and another thing in terms of the game that I saw and thought, that feels unusual, was Penno whinging at the ref. And he's a guy that just has a big smile on his face all the time, and he was getting frustrated and whinging. And
there was one... I can't remember who attempted to give the pass to him that was an unsuccessful pass down the right wing late on in the game. And Penno was really, like, whinging, the best way to describe it, at his own teammates at that, which, again, it seems unlike him.
So it might be putting two and two together and making five, but those two bits of individual evidence, I think, hint at some...
I can tell you which player it was, because he did it three times, Mo Farna. He ran three times late on in the game, twice on the left, once on the right. He ran across and just ate up 20 yards of space and either gave a crap pass.
Where's he play now?
Bordeaux.
My beloved Bordeaux.
Does he play Bordeaux? Yeah.
With Pinot.
Him and Benny Taps, the
they
centers.
Got Luku, Jalibert, Pinot, Moefana, BLBRA. They've got basically the whole French backline except for Ramos.
Maybe that's what they're missing.
And Bioros, and they've got Deportier.
The centre, he's ace.
Yeah. Benny Taps is kind of like...
Backup.
Backup.
Nah, don't believe you.
but Mo Farna did that three times, including the conclusion of the game, which was...
Just ran into touch.
Yeah, which was weird. Because France, they have to win. Like, they're at home to a much weaker team, even though they've got 14 men, and they had multiple opportunities in the final 5 minutes to attack from anywhere, and they attacked from anywhere. So for Mo Farna just basically to run the ball off the pitch to conclude the game, there'll be a lot of disappointed French players and fans at that.
Just on the kick itself, Phil, did you think there was any argument for the kick to be taken again or the shot clock to be extended?
It was a bit weird because there was a lot of movement from the French players.
Yeah, forwards towards the ball as well.
Yeah.
There was a water carrier on as well, just sort of walking around in front of the kicker. It was weird.
I would have liked, Christoph Ridley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I would have liked him to just stop, like, when... Because the ball went out, so he couldn't stop it when there's the last 10 seconds, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because the ball went out so fast... After that, I think it would have been, like, it was within 5 seconds of it hitting the post, the ball was off the pitch and the game was over. There probably was scope to go back and just say, right, what actually happened? Is there any infringement that we will impact the kick that we could potentially allow it to be retaken? Just for satisfaction. But overall, there's got to be an error from Garbisi. Because the ball doesn't just fall off a tee in a stadium with no wind.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So Italian. I mean, the Netflix series is shaping up to be a great one when we watch it next year. Some of the stories already that we've got, that the France getting out of jail,
yeah,
2 weeks ago and today.
Yeah, France, they just didn't look... They started off well, obviously, at the Olivon try.
Yeah.
But then from minutes 20 through to, say, 38 in the first half, they had a... There was one stat during that period. They'd had 100% territory in the last 10 minutes and were unable to get over the line. That's very un-French-like. It's testament to the Italian defence, but it's also poor by France to have so much territory and just get nothing out of it.
Yeah. Agreed. Contact chasers@gmail.com with any thoughts you have on anything, by the way, and I'll get through some of the emails as we go through.
Can you get past all the South African ones? Are you actually be able to?
I've been through them and put them elsewhere, so you haven't got them clogging up our collective email.
We're all filed.
So I'll give you a teaser.
Yeah.
Before we move on, occasionally we talk about things that have happened online and nonsense like that. And this week, I've ended up having to send messages to someone from another podcast. In this case, it's Blood and Mud. But because I'm the kind of guy I am, I've actually recorded the message. So I'm going to play this message at the end of the podcast.
So this is a message that has been sent
and received and responded to, and I'll tell you all about it later.
Wow.
It is going to blow your mind.
Is it potentially Patreon pod?
No, it's not. It's most certainly not. I want everyone to hear this.
Okay. Well, that's JB. Do you know what? So... I am. I don't need to pretend to be. I am a professional broadcaster.
Yeah, it's your whole living.
20 years of radio, and that is about as good a tease as I've ever heard.
Yeah, I'm terrified. Feeling nervous.
To the point, I reckon there's probably a lot of people who right now will skip to the end to hear it and then come back to this. Welcome back. If you've just been to the end of the podcast and you've heard what JB was talking about, I've got no idea at this point. Neither does Phil. He's looking nervous. We will see. Interesting.
Can't wait.
I'm sure it'll be lovely and fun and wholesome. Anyway... we can always touch on more of that game, but let's get down and into the weeds of England and Scotland.
Ooh.
Particularly England, because Scotland, congratulations on a win.
Yep.
And can I say, more broadly speaking, have you ever done a Six Nations game at Edinburgh?
Yep. One, maybe two.
Yeah,
definitely one.
I've done at least two, but I've done two Scotland v Wales games. I've never done England. Or indeed any other
but
team.
I'm sure it was probably similar in the sense that Edinburgh is an absolutely cracking place on a Six Nations weekend.
Awesome.
You know, I loved it.
Yes and no. So, if you like a good drink, and I am guilty of that, sometimes these places are not the best places to go. I mean, it's good to be with all your mates and have all the pubs heaving, but later on at night it does get a little bit... It's hard to get in places. It's hard to know where to go. Well, that's what I'd say.
That is true.
But actually, yeah. For the daytime, it's amazing.
The whole day, yeah. Amazing. For that 4:45 kickoff, just having the whole, like, all of the pubs were rammed from
then
about
walking down
11 a.m. Yeah. The Grass Market, and it is
actually brilliant. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's great,
and it's such a beautiful city.
It's gorgeous.
It's so cool.
Yeah,
there's one more game up in Edinburgh this year, isn't there? There must be one.
So they're playing over in Dublin. So they must have Italy in 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty good. Sam Warburton was writing in the paper this week that obviously he experienced Murrayfield an awful lot as a Wales player, but he'd never experienced, obviously, an England-Scotland game. And he said his first time experiencing it as a commentator, it actually shocked him, like the intensity of feeling.
Yeah. I'd heard this. I mentioned it on the podcast last week. And in fact, quite a few Scotland fans got in touch and said, oh, no, we'll be really nice. Yeah, we want the team to win, but I wasn't suggesting that it crossed any line.
We weren't suggesting sectarian violence.
I was looking
Scotland.
I was looking forward to a little bit of edge. I'd heard there was a little bit of edge, and there was.
Was there?
Yeah, there was. It was... Yeah, you felt it. Like not. I never felt unwelcome or that it was really hostile. Not like a real partisan football crowd, but it was the closest to a football crowd in a UK international stadium that I've felt, or a UK rugby game.
The Celtic games are very much like brothers in arms. It's all a bit, but yeah, when England show up, so England Wales, when I've been to see that game, that's dynamite.
Like every time they tried swing low, it got booed to silence.
Really?
Yeah, the whole crowd just like.
The only way to shut up Scotland is to beat them. Yeah, that's the only way to do it.
Something that England have summarily failed to do for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and four in a row. Do you know that, the last time that happened? That stat that's been going around?
I heard the stat. Victorian era.
1896. Yeah. They've got England's number.
1896. And they're probably busy. Someone was probably busy drawing up the plans for the Titanic then. Sketching it out.
It's incredible, isn't it? They've got England's number for sure. Although the first 10 minutes, it looked great.
So just on Scotland then. I mean, do you agree with me that they just need across the 15 to be serviceable? As in, they just can't be out-competed utterly. And then they've got enough individuals with enough magic to do the damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like as long as they can get parity in and around the set piece and the breakdown, which they very much did in this game.
They did.
They have so much kind of attacking dynamite.
Yeah, I can totally understand why Scotland didn't want and have resisted losing the down week, the second fallow week, which will be gone next year because they do not have a deep squad. And like, if Xander Fagerson is not fit, Scotland are screwed.
Well, it's one of those things.
They are screwed.
I don't know. It must be very nice for a Scotland player to know, particularly a forward, if I just do my job adequately, if I really focus on just doing my job, we should win this because I don't need to go above and beyond what my capability is. I just need to hit those rucks as hard as I can, scrimmage as hard as I can. In a way, it's liberating. Mm. Whereas if you're England and you're Ben Earl, you're thinking, I need to win this. Somehow I need to get in the loose. I need to do some magic. I need to accelerate away and score tries left, right and centre because nobody else is doing it. Whereas Scotland, it must be very comforting to know, just do your job and you'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, because it'll either be Finn or it'll be Hugh Jones or it'll be Steyn or Kinghorn or Tuipulotu or...
Oh, my word.
Yeah, someone's doing something.
Duan.
Yeah. Oh, Duan my is. Word.
It must be... That's kind of... The only way that forwards make backs comfortable, it's the opposite for Scotland. It's the sheer quality of those backs must make the forwards incredibly comfortable. Mm.
Yeah, I know, I agree with that. And one of their bad losses of the last 6 months was against South Africa, where...
They get outmatched.
Yeah, they did.
And do you see Jesse Creel said they were the toughest, he felt they were the toughest team they faced. Mm. And they did fall away in the last half hour, but... Scotland butchered a great chance and they were looking great against South Africa. Yeah.
Well, the story on that one is apparently they kept Finn Russell quiet. I don't think they did. I just think they put enough pressure on the Scotland pack that it impacted on Finn. I mean, maybe it's one and the same.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is I don't buy the narrative that you focus on Finn Russell.
Yeah.
You're focusing on the wrong thing. You're solving for the wrong problem. Yeah. You want to beat Scotland, you've got to beat their pack because they are beatable and then hopefully everything will sort of crumble around it.
Yeah.
And that's not what happened this time. Although there were moments when Ferguson went off and Miller Mills came on that you thought maybe
instant England... scrum penalty, which I think is what George Ford scored the 3 points from to go 10-0 up.
Yeah. And you think maybe we can kind of use this momentum and build on it. But couldn't. And Scotland, to their great credit, Finn Russell's great credit, England conceded few penalties, but Scotland just kept it going. England only conceded 5 penalties.
That's amazing.
Scotland took 3, they've got 3 lots of 3 points from those 5 penalties, and Finn Russell again was immaculate from the boot.
Yeah. So I was being, I came away disappointed in the result, loved the experience, but kind of thinking, all right, I'm going to give England the benefit of the doubt a little bit because I saw a bit more from them, a bit of endeavour. Do you know what it was? I was on the train today. I woke up in a different mood. I was thinking, oh, am I just... I had some beers last night and I'm up early and on the train. Am I just a bit grumpy? Maybe. But then I happened to be, just as chance would have it, was sat opposite from Chris Foy, Daily Mail rugby correspondent.
Ah.
And when he was talking about it, I was like, do you know what? He's absolutely...
Did you say hello to him?
Yeah. We had a good old chat. Make a beeline for Chris's article because it will be very good. And I was like, oh, what are you writing then? Because all the guys that do the Sunday reports, like Stephen Jones, Stuart Barnes, and all the rest of it, they'll be focused more on the game. Whereas the guys that do the articles on Monday, like Chris, will maybe potentially going in a little bit. And he was like, what is going on? So here's the thing. It's not good enough.
All right. Well, let me just tell me what you don't think is good enough.
Right. Jamie George, Steve Borthwick, they're leaning on this narrative that this is a new team and it's a transition. Okay. And I'm calling BS on that. That is, and I said this previously on the podcast, that's rubbish. It's not a new team. They've lost Owen Farrell. They've lost Courtney Laws. Who else? They've got hundreds of caps in that team that went out there yesterday. That is not an excuse. You've got players like Ollie Lawrence. When he plays for Bath, he runs around with the ball in one hand, doing amazing things. When he plays for England, he throws the ball into touch. You've got George Furbank, who just glides when he plays for Northampton. And he was like...
He looked all right, Furbank, to be fair.
No,
He had two bad handling errors, one which led to the second Duan try.
George Ford is just the most natural, smooth rugby player, and he's wanging a ball into Furbank's head. I don't know what's going on, but
there was multiple poor passes from Ford.
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute.
My conclusion on this, just to complete the thinking, is they're overcoached, and he's just not letting the boys play.
Okay, so let's build counter narrative this. I think the first thing I'd point out is, well, they weren't very good to start with. That's why Steve Borthwick has a job, because they weren't very good. They were on the decline, even with those great players. They just weren't performing, and that's why Eddie Jones had to go. Now, Steve Borthwick inherited this team, but they weren't particularly good until they met South Africa. And they're like, ooh, that's a bit tasty. That's all right. Now, it's possible that a team like that, who are good individual players, can raise their game enough to paper over the cracks of the entire rest of the competition, which may have happened. But then Argentina wasn't a terrible performance, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, Argentina was, it was a utilitarian or efficient performance. It wasn't an amazing performance, but they did a hell of a job.
And they dominated on that night.
Now, you fast forward to the Six Nations, the first two games were against weaker opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the real test that they had. Now, I'm not against this method of playing, which I've got. But if you're going to do it, you can't make mistakes. And they're making too many mistakes. That's the thing. They're making far too many mistakes.
But this is my point. Why? Mm. Why? Why do players look completely different in an England shirt than in a club shirt?
Well, I think this might be the point they're bringing up, which is it's a new team, not in terms necessarily of personnel, but maybe in terms of the application of the plans which they're looking to employ. That would make sense to me. Felix Jones coming on board. I mean, there's a lot of stuff spoken this week about how their fitness will be tested. I don't think that is true, because I think these are naturally incredibly fit athletes anyway. I don't think fitness is kind of... Maybe if it's a fitness thing, I think it's going to be the fitness of their mindset, because your mind will defeat you far before your body if you're a player of that caliber. I think those mental errors could really account for quite a lot, actually.
And the fitness, if you look at the depth of England's bench compared to Scotland's bench, then England should have the fitness boost. The fitness should not come into it from England's perspective.
But on the point, JB, I take the points you made, but how do you square what I've said? That I'm just calling BS on this whole narrative about, oh, we're a team, we're on a journey, it's early days, we're in transition. No, you're not.
Well, they're
not.
Do they? I mean, that's the thing. So back to the Ollie Lawrence thing. He's got to learn to play differently. So you could throw out the Borthwick way. You definitely could do that.
Well, okay, can you describe to me what the Borthwick way is? Because I can't I don't know what... But it wasn't against Scotland, was it? Weirdly, they went back to the old Borthwick game plan when they were chasing the game in the last 20 minutes. That's what... I was like, what are you doing? Now's the time to let go, like Wales did in the second half against Scotland. We're 27 points down, let's go. Actually, England were 11 points down, or... Yeah, 11 point or 9, or 12 points down. And then they started doing box kicks again.
Yeah, you've got to be squeaky clean to win like this. The reason you've got to do that is because you're relying on mistakes from the opposition. And that's why I'm talking about mistakes. You are right, though, Tim. Like, you can't chase a game playing this style of rugby. South Africa could not win a game playing this style of rugby, and they're the best at it in the world. So how England expect to do it is beyond me. The box kick is where they feel comfortable. They feel that they can get it in the air. They feel that they can chase and apply pressure. And this game is about... is about pressure. The more worrying aspect for me would be the lack of suitability of the line-out, because this is what Borthwick does. Not only is he a line-out guru in the nuts and bolts and jumping and lifting and all that stuff, but he's a guru in terms of all of that and then using it as a launch platform. Didn't see it. Did not see it one bit. And that to me is the bigger problem. And then once that goes, you do have certain elements of the rugby game where you hang your hats. So I always think it's the line-out. It's the easiest thing for someone's coach, it's the easiest thing for you to win, it's the easiest thing for you to think that you're really good at. But once that goes, where does that leave your mindset for, you know, how you play in the open? And do you have to force things which you otherwise wouldn't force? And there's probably some element of that going on as well.
Yeah, the line out I thought was okay overall, although noting that the third Duan try was scored off an England loss line, I think the only England loss line out, mm-hmm. although there's a few scratchy ones. It was the most frustrating thing for me, particularly given the try after 4 or 5 minutes, was just the lack of cohesion and connectivity, attacking threat from the backs.
Yeah.
Because they scored that one try, beautiful, great attacking move, strike move off the back of a scrum.
Yeah.
It worked perfectly.
Earl with the pick.
Yeah.
To Kerr.
Who missed
out Lawrence.
To the back for Ford.
Then Slade was the dummy line to Furbank. Great. Yeah, perfect.
Lovely. And everyone took the ball to the line.
Yeah.
The timing of the pass were perfect. The angles were perfect. You thought, God, if they can do that, they'll cut anyone open. And just no matter what, they just couldn't do it time and time and time again. And maybe that's where the transition piece is correct from Borthwick, that they're changing the way. But these are hyper talented players.
Exactly, and the more time they spend together, the less competent they seem to be.
Yeah,
which says to me that like whatever they're doing in camp, and I don't know if it is still we've heard stories in the past about that Saracens clique. JB, you're aware of that,
mm-hmm.
and there's the Saracens and what's the other club? Saracens and
Tigers.
Saracens and Tigers, who love Borthwick. Love Wigglesworth.
Yeah.
Swear by everything they do. And you can imagine the lads from Northampton going, what are we doing? Can we not just can we not play some
fling rugby? Fling it about and not be successful for 5 years. I'm a disciple of Borthwick. I think, broadly speaking, he's got it right. It's one of those, it is a bit like Eddie Jones, which is, he's not winning. This doesn't look good. Is the alternative better? In the case of Eddie Jones, yes, it was better. But what would be the alternative for England? Because I don't think there's somebody out there. Like, back in the day, it was...
I'm not saying get rid of Borthwick. That's not the point I'm making.
But I guess the point you would be making is, what's the alternative style of play?
It is tough. And especially when you watch that game, and outside that, the two England tries, there was so little spark across that back line. Whereas Scotland were effervescent with the amount of spark. They had so much spark that every time there was a turnover ball, you thought, God, they are going to score from here.
Let me just put something else to you, right? So it's 30 points to 20 in the end, right?
21, yeah.
30-21.
Okay. Take off Duan van der Merwe. Are you guys still going to be really angry with England? Because he's an unusual player, to put it mildly, isn't he?
He is unusual. That is kind of like if my auntie had uncles, if my auntie had bollocks, she'd be my uncle.
There's a lot of, that guy obviously had a lot of biltong or something when he was in South Africa.
A lot of it. At a young age. Liquid biltong. I mean, particularly the try where he goes on the outside of whoever he goes on.
Earl.
And Henry Slade.
That's just for a man that big, that is unnatural. But I spoke about his pace before. It's the most underrated part of his game is how fast he is.
He's so fast.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there was some stat about the equivalent. In fact, might have even
the equivalent
been
train. Lorry?
It might have been on an email. I'm just... oh, I can't see it. It was something along the lines of the equivalent, because he's the size he is and the speed he travels, he's the equivalent of like a Fiat Punto would have to be going at 8-9 miles an hour to generate the same force or something like that.
Love it. Awesome. Which is broadly speaking correct. He's an unbelievable. Now, I'm not saying that Well, no, I am saying that he's probably the difference. I don't know his answer. I don't know. But he did make a huge difference to that game.
He did make a huge difference. Yeah. He did. But there's still... It's the bit that I can't... There's two bits that I can't get over. The handling errors from England were enormous.
Yeah.
But Scotland, there was a stat, I think it was halfway through the second half, that at that point, Scotland had actually made more handling errors than England. They were probably less obvious because it was like going wide less. But England's handling errors, bad. Scotland's ability to capitalise on England's handling errors was so huge.
Yes.
And vice versa, England
yes.
didn't capitalise on any of Scotland's handling errors. So yes. that would be the two downsides for England, the handling errors and their inability to capitalise on turnover ball in their favour.
As individuals, let's just focus on the pack a second. So I feel like I talk about Ellis Genge every single week now, which is... Well, he's in the England squad, so maybe I should be talking about him every single week. And his very talented wing defence sister who plays for Romans.
Yeah, of course.
One of the reasons you'll be making handling errors is because you're not dominant at the gain line. You know, you get over the gain line, the defence is backtracking, everything becomes easier because you've got more space. Like, he's meant to be there as a carrier. Did not look like much of a carrier to me. And then it just made me think, maybe it's not his fault per se, but he might just be the canary in the coal mine. Who was carrying the ball, effectively? I mean, where did that come from? So it's all right to say that, you know, the boys were throwing silly passes and they looked, you know, incoherent. But the forwards have got to get over the gain line. That's what they have to do, first and foremost. If you want everything to be easy, get over the gain line. And I don't see enough of that. It wasn't until George Martin came on, who I thought had a really... Do you know who else had a really good impact? It was Stewart. Stewart worked really hard for about 10 minutes, which you should do as a sub. But I just didn't see anyone really threatening the Scotland line or bending it.
Yeah, the carrying from the forwards
weak
was an issue. You would normally look to Ollie Lawrence or historically Manu to do that. Ollie Lawrence had a really bad game.
He had a terrible game.
He had a real stinker.
It was a stinker.
He's just come back from injury.
Yeah.
And I think he's a hell of a player. That's his worst game in an England jersey.
Yeah.
Comfortably, I think.
He threw it into touch. That was awful.
Yeah. And it was at least two other handling errors besides that. I just got it here. Ollie Lawrence carried 7 times for a total of 9 metres.
Good God.
As a centre. That is bad.
Is not good, is it? It's what, yeah.
Tim Ward, yeah. Just on that, contactairchasers@gmail.com. He says, hi lads, I was quite frustrated by the media suggesting Ollie Lawrence is a traditional hard-running international 12. He simply does not have the same bulk as Barrett, Diallende, Donty, Aki, etc. He's a completely different kind of centre.
Yeah, I agree.
He must only ever be played at 13. We must acknowledge that the only 12 we have of an acceptable international standard is Tuilagi.
No, disagree. Strong, yeah. Disagree, hard.
First half, there's first definitely some truth in that, yeah.
First half, that email, exceptional. Second half, no.
What about this one then? Ben Collins, contactairchasers@gmail.com. He says, so what the hell does it feel like to be an England fan right now? Awful. Frustrating as hell. I struggle to watch now what looks like some absolutely brilliant individual players play some awful, confused mess as a team. I read the lazy journalism that describes some of our world-class players. Nonsense. We need to wake up and smell the coffee that we don't actually have any. What defines world-class? If there was 2 matchday squads of 23 out of the best players in the world, would any England player make it? I don't think they would.
I don't think that's fair. Okay, so I do believe that if you put Mauro Itoje in a South Africa shirt, he'd be considered one of the best in the world.
He is still considered one of the best in the world.
And not only that, I think that a lot of the people that you think are not the best in the world now, always say they're the best in the world, but they're not. I think a lot of these lads, if you put them in a different environment, would absolutely excel.
A different environment. Again, yeah. So what's going on in the environment? Because you look at... If someone was watching that game today and go, one of these locks is a world-class operator, they go, Scott Cummings. He's the boy. That's who you'd pick on the strength of what you saw at Murrayfield. Mauro Itoje was actually one of England's better players.
He was.
George Martin, when he came on, I thought was great.
From his attempt at a retake.
That
was horrific.
Thanks for reminding me of that. No, but you know, the atmosphere might not be as simple as like what is happening in England, as in Team England. It could be something else. It could be like just the dynamics of the Premiership or the dynamics of bringing the clubs together. Or yep. You know, the lads.
Everyone's getting pay cuts.
Like, or just the lads themselves just not getting on. I mean, I have no evidence to suggest that that is the case. or any of these things in place. I think it's probably most likely to be, you know, within England itself. But they had loads of time together before the World Cup, and I can't say it's that much better then.
No, not particularly.
Ben just goes on to say, we have a type 5 that doesn't dominate the scrum, a back row where we've decided a wrecking ball 8 is not needed to punch holes, substandard nines.
Not that they've decided that they don't need one. They don't have one.
There's not one available.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, there's 6 or 7 of them just waiting to show up.
Give it a couple of years, and it was a farce of an England-Saxons game today. I'm going to call them England-Saxons. It was a farce of an England-Saxons game playing Portugal's C team.
What was the score in the end?
91-5.
Great.
But this I think this really highlights Dean Ryan logic, where Dean Ryan, when he was Worcester head coach, we've beaten a team who have beaten one of the best teams in the top 14 when they beat Oyonnax.
Who had beaten Toulon. Who were the European champions at the time.
Yes. So England hammered Portugal. Portugal beat Fiji. Fiji beat England. So England A or England Saxons are better than England. It'd be hard to disagree with following this weekend.
Well, it's hard to draw any conclusions out of that game, and I'm not saying he's ready now, but Russie Tuima is 130 kilogram.
Is he really?
He's very much in the French mould of a lock.
Hang on. Russie Tuima.
He was number 8 at Exeter, now converted to a lock.
Ah! Who is the guy who is the number 8?
Oh, what's his name?
I love him.
Yeah,
handsome chap.
Exeter.
Oh, Exeter, Greg Fisselau.
He
was on the bench for England A. He looks like he needs to get a bit bigger. Russie Tuima is big.
Yeah.
And he's 130 kg.
He's in the French tight headlock mould.
He is. Yeah. It doesn't solve your number 8 problem.
Well, no. But if you want someone like off slow ball to try and dent the gain line, him and give it another year, I reckon, Chandler Cunningham South. He looks like a test match
strong,
animal.
Strong, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he is remarkably strong. When you see him go into contact and manhandle
him, he's very big.
Oh, hello.
He's massive.
That excites me.
He's nice, big, powerful hips as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like him leapfrogging so many lads to get in the squad. I didn't think I was going to, because I think Tom Pearson, I'm not a big Tom Pearson fan at the moment. But, you know, Ben Curry or somebody probably deserved it more. I think they've got this one right. I do. I think this is the boy.
And when he did get selected, I said, it's partly about what he can do now, but it is his potential, given that he's only 20 or 21, his potential is absolutely
enormous.
Monstrous. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Ben goes on to say, substandard nines, a freaking mess of our own making in the centres, and the best club wingers watching mediocre performances of some players playing out of their club positions.
Who would you think the best club wingers are? I mean, Will Muir.
Caden Murley.
Pains to say it, Joe Cock and a singer.
He's been one of the best this year.
Yeah.
How much of that is having Finn Russell?
Absolutely true.
How would Doohan be as useful without Finn?
No.
Doohan and Thokunasinga, they're probably, certainly physically, they're two of the most similar wingers on the planet.
I think Doohan's bigger and probably faster, unbelievably.
He may well be both, but if Thokunasinga is not closest in athleticism and stature, who else is? Maybe Julian Surveyor 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Oh, just very quickly round. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Ben Lamb?
He's a big boy.
He is a big, strong boy.
Where's he? Is he at Bordeaux?
Is he Montpellier?
He's somewhere in France. Yeah, actually. Not sure.
He's also older than you think as well.
Yeah.
Do you know who's older than I realised? Keane Healy.
35, 36?
36.
Yeah.
Really getting on.
Speaking of old props, Dan Cole, actually, he had a good game. His kick chase was
phenomenal.
He made 2 or 3 outstanding tackles. I massively got this wrong, and England got this wrong to their detriment. I said after the 2019 World Cup, he'd be done. He's actually probably still England's best tight prop.
Which is depressing.
With the greatest respect to Dan Cole, that's depressing.
But just before you say it's depressing, how much better is he than other tight head props? Because we need to start asking this question now. Because
he's not that much better than other tight head props.
Wales?
He's definitely better than Wales' options at tight head prop.
Scotland?
Not Xander Ferguson.
Okay, so who replaces Xander Ferguson?
Miller Mills.
Is he better than Miller Mills?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it comes to the point where you think, okay, but just because we're not comfortable with him, is he actually as bad as we think? Because I was on.
But then you go to like
France.
He might not be first choice in any top 14 club in France.
I think he probably would. You know,
he probably would, but he's not making the. He's not getting anywhere close to the French squad with. Uini and Aldegheri.
Okay, they are the both
they are way better.
Uini's a weird character because like he's just monstrously big. But you know, after Aldegheri, he's got a shot.
He does if Mohamed Hawass is in prison.
He is in prison. He's very much locked up. But yeah, you know, it's actually Loosehead where I think France is stronger than Tighthead.
Mm.
And then Ireland, they've got one very high quality.
I think Finlay Beelam's good. Tom O'Toole.
Finlay Beelam is good.
Yeah, Finlay Beelam's
good. Is that much better than Dan Coleman?
No, but I think he'd be fourth choice in Ireland.
Yeah, Ireland would not countenance this, by the way. They would not countenance this behaviour like one bit.
No.
But, you know, in terms of actually where he is compared to other tight head props, he stacks up pretty well.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not worthy of his spot. I just spotted this email from Will Nicholson, contact@gmail.com. I think that. I mean, I'm cognitive dissonance here. It echoes my thoughts, so I'm reading this one out. A couple of thoughts from England, Scotland, blah, 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 blah. I was thinking about what a masterstroke Borthwick has played with people's perceptions of the team. This idea it's a team in transition. Yet when you look at the players picked position by position, the amount of experience is ridiculously high. Yes, they don't have, quote, cohesion, but again and again, is that more a clever use of jargon? Do players really need to play together in those exact combos a dozen times before it works?
Yes.
The reason I highlight a dozen is because Borthwick mentioned Scotland's 10-12-13 combo. If that cohesion is so important, then why drop Dingwall and bring Lawrence straight back in out of position? He had an opportunity to, quote, build cohesion, but chose not to. I understand the reason, but it's frustrating to listen to. One final point that might sound reductive, but do England really need to play free-flowing rugby? Can't they just be good at defence, set-piece, aggressive quick rucks, and see what happens
from
there?
Never last bit. Well done.
Box kicks.
Which is kind of the Steve Borthwick mantra, isn't it?
Yes, but then, like, so Danny Kerr, who started, his box kicking was woeful.
They are missing. So let's just give Borthwick his due for a second. When he has the personnel available to him, and the personnel in this case is one particular scrum half, Van Portfleet, who can box kick like nobody else, specifically in terms of his range, maybe not the accuracy, the range is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It works well. You've got to give him his dues because he's not just trying to replace him like for like. He has gone into the stable of scrum halves and said, well, what are you actually good at? And then made those players play a style which they are good at. So he's not replacing them like for like. I think when Van Portfleet comes back, that will help him a lot because that is what he wants to do. He wants to box kick and chase. Now, Ben Spencer's not terrible. Danny Kerr's not terrible. But they're just not Van Port. Actually, Ben Spencer's kicking is very good. It is very, very good.
What do you make of the selection at 15? Because that was before the game, that was the talking point with Furbank.
I thought it was maybe more tactical because Scotland don't kick high, they kick long, and so someone who can cover more grass. Because Finn Russell is very, very good at finding grass in the backfield.
But do you think Finn Russell just will think, today I'll kick high?
I mean, they did do a bit of that in the second half.
It's not beyond him, is it?
But also, that's not necessarily a bad thing. If your selection gets
Finn Russell to stop doing something he's very good at,
what he's doing. That's a good outcome.
No, Finn Russell will do whatever is most effective on the day. He will do. So I hope that isn't the reason because that would be ridiculous. Like, we'll just make Finn Russell's going to work that out.
No, but this is what I mean. I think it's the prescriptive, data driven Borthwick flow chart spreadsheet model. He was like, right, I have got Ollie Lawrence in now and Dingwall's out, so that means I have my big man in the back line, so I can get rid of one of the big men there because I need someone that's that's quicker. And it's rather than like a feel, it's a robotic. That box is ticked. I need to tick this box and not having that sort of fluidity.
So there
and
are
that
some,
feel
some,
for it.
What is the thing? You'll have heard this from Chris Williamson when a measure becomes the outcome is no longer a good measure.
It's no longer a good measure.
What I mentioned last week. Goddard's law.
That's the one, good odds,
yeah. Yeah. When a measure becomes a target, it's no longer
Phil,
good.
Which is, I mean, that is high praise indeed, Phil. That JB heard, that JB thought what he'd heard from you was from Chris Williamson. That's quite something, mate.
So that was that in relation to penalties?
We were talking about it.
Yeah, because I thought about that today for penalties. I was like, okay, so five penalties is great. And now five penalties will help you win a game, but in this case, it didn't.
Yeah.
But if you hit all of those things, you should eventually win a game, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is kind of like...
You're like 100% completion in the red zone. That's going to
help. Yeah, that's... If scoring more points than the opposition, that normally helps as well. That's the primary target.
Well, hang on. So actually, Goodall sort of doesn't work, does it? Because like when the measure becomes a target, it's points.
On that, if you boil it down
Goodall
to the...
Give me Mr. Goodall here, right now.
But that is the only fundamental target. Any other target.
Bearing in mind that points is the ultimate aim, and that is the measure upon which games of rugby are decided, it was strange that didn't seem to be in England's mind when they were chasing the game. Like I say, we're how many points down? Let's go for three. We're how many points down? Let's box kick.
But they are good soldiers, though, aren't they, England?
Yeah.
So do you remember, it is mentioned in the Six Nations documentary with Scotland, and I know this for a fact from a player who was there in the change room at the time. When Scotland were down like 30 points against England, they just threw away Gregor Townsend. They just ignored Gregor Townsend. And Finn Russell jokes about it like, well, he has his ideas, I have my ideas, but I'm on the pitch. But England are good soldiers to the nth degree. I think it's that, you know, that private school kind of compliance. And maybe it's not the private school thing. Maybe you just don't get to where you need to in the Premiership unless you are incredibly compliant. Because it's not like they are... bursting with loads and loads of talent. Like, you
have to be really, really good.
Sorry, that's not what I meant. Yeah.
You have to be really good, because Finn Russell, if he wasn't Finn Russell, would have been bombed by Gregor Townsend. Gregor Townsend probably, in a funny way, doesn't... Well, from what we've seen in the past, he probably would have felt more in control had Finn not been there.
I'm going to make a different world prediction here. If Finn Russell was English, he would never have got a cap. And if Ryan Lamb was Scottish, he'd have 20.
Yeah. I agree with that. I completely do. It's like Liam Williams never would have got a cap if he was English.
Never in a million years.
Jack Morgan would never get a cap if he was English.
So maybe that's the answer to your question, Tim. Like, what is going on in the camp? They're just a bunch of Charlie Yuleses. Just like they love to sound the part. They love to say the right words. They love to say,
we're all bought in their kit.
We're a team. They can lift weights. But they're all just compliant. They're compliant, boring, middle managers. That's what they are.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I like the theory. I think we should shower a little bit of praise on Scotland. We already have on Duane van der Merwe, who is just ridiculous. Finn Russell was outrageous. Ben White's been playing really well and is taking and more of the game, the playmaking decisions.
I was amazed, you know, when they let him go from Leicester Tigers. They've got some great scrum halves, and that's why they did it. But he was captaining the team when they let him go. The same season that they sent him to London. But they didn't even send him to London Irish. They just cut him. He went to London Irish because he had nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
And now he ends up in Toulon. So I'm delighted to see Ben White doing well.
Yeah, it's great.
And really good player.
Hugh Jones against England.
Good Englishman as well, Ben
White.
An
Englishman, yeah. Well, it's quite a few of those that we did get an email pointing out how many of the Scotland team...
Are actually Scottish
or not. But we don't need to go into that.
It's the same for England. Is it Vinopola's, Mike Catt, you know...
Well, Vinopola's were at school.
Yeah.
They were here since they were here.
I genuinely do not care.
It's fine. I'm not going into it.
You do really care when it's England... getting potential dual cap players into the squad, though.
No, do you know what I care about for that? It's not England getting the best talent. I do not care about that one bit. I care about the corruption of the player's career. because I think it's damaging to the player. So I think if you're getting a player and you're telling him he's better than he is, and you're example,
players need to have more self-awareness then.
Yeah, but they don't, do they? Because they're 18-year-old kids. They're idiots.
They need to have better advice.
I mean, with the best word in the world, the advice environment is very, very competitive. I don't know how many players as an agent I would keep if Scotland phoned up and said, you're a 50 cap hooker. He phones his agent and goes, you're not a 50 cap hooker, mate. You just go and find a different agent. Well, you don't believe in me. You're meant to be doing my bloody contract. Like, so
Save Your World wouldn't have
that's the advice you need.
Breathe deeply. You need to know you're not a 50 cap hooker. In any world are you a 50 cap hooker? But like, they did this to Sam Moore, they dragged him into the squad. They did it to Gary Graham, they dragged him into the squad. I think Cam Redpath, when they dragged him into the squad, Cam Redpath then goes asks.
I love the emotive language, dragged him into a squad.
Kicking and screaming, right? I mean, I just don't think it's good for the players. I think you should pick these guys. Look, if the guy's from South Africa and he's the best option you have, bring him in, play him. But don't mess around because they've got one English parent and you think Scotland might be sniffing about, because I think that's really wrong. Mm. That's what I'm saying. Oh, by the way, we've not spoke about a player who I thought actually had a good showing with, I think, Welsh parents.
Hugh Jones.
Oh, no, because we're not talking about that game. Oh, no, we are. Emmanuel Feo-Wabosso looked like an effective force on the international field, I thought.
Yeah, he was, in that game, probably the one person who showed an attacking outside back threat. Mm. Now, that's not to say that Daly and Freeman and Furbank don't have that.
Or that Radwan or Murley and others wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they just didn't show it in that game.
No.
Feo-Wabosso immediately showed his attacking
threat. Just to be clear...
It's good.
Just to be clear, Steve Great Borthwick try. Has already directed a significant amount of money towards Anthony Watson, so he will be back in the team as soon as he's available.
I don't get that, you know.
That does feel like time to let him go.
Do you know, there was a quote today from Mark Dobson, or this week from Mark Dobson, about Courtney Laws, who's moved to Breathe.
Mm.
And he said, we just didn't want to pay what they were paying, effectively. I think that's great leadership. As much as I love Courtney Laws, which I do, as a player and everything else, that, to me, from Mark Dobson, is exactly what you need to hear if you're into your club rugby. You need to know when to call time and when to reallocate your resources elsewhere. Ireland should have learned the same with Sexton, and England should learn the same with these aging wingers. Well, I don't think it's a good idea.
It's an interesting one, but because the RFU now pay a chunk of Anthony Watson's wage, is there almost like a, well, we've kind of got a... Got,
exactly got what there is. There must be. There must be.
There will be.
Steve Borthwick has probably said, we want this guy.
At least to bring him into the squad. By the way, I mean, he will be in the squad.
Also, isn't it just wrong to think that, you know, the RFU pay the salary for this guy, and therefore he will probably get in the squad. So, hang on, what am I trying to say here? They're paying the salary for this guy who then has to get in the squad, and yet if you just removed him from circulation of, you know, within the England team, somebody eventually would step up and take that spot, because it, you know, that's just what happens. They won't play people from France. So we know that this happens because people go to France all the time and they are barred from playing. People then step up. Why Anthony Watson bucks this trend? If you think he's too expensive for club rugby in England, send him to France. Mm-hmm. Send him to France. And if you still want him, change your eligibility laws, but don't keep one guy on a special contract.
Yeah. The kind of booking the trend, you've got to do it with consistent central contracts or a variant on consistent central contracts, yeah, or not. You've picked not. You can't then have one or two people.
Well, there's Jamie George. We understand Maro Itoje. We don't know. There's more to come as well. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, but I was... Sorry, go on. I was going to say, back on to Scotland. Hugh Jones was ace. Rory Darge, flipping love that guy.
His work around the British, so his kind of post-tackle work to just disrupt and just make
so
it
good.
Slow the game down.
I'm a massive Richie fan.
Richie,
he had a good game.
Yeah, I like him a lot. Very nuggety player as
well. He was not good against Wales.
He was not.
Bombed out the squad, back in to start, and he looked good.
He's just so unusual. The way he snaffles ball is very... He takes risks other players wouldn't around the breakdown, and often they... they come up okay. Yeah, I just really like him. I think he's a really good player. He's not, again, he's a sort of guy who's quite unorthodox, would never get an England team.
Yeah, yeah, wouldn't get anywhere.
Not even close.
Not even, wouldn't be in the top.
I wonder,
15.
I know we've been talking about like data-driven whatever it is, right? And this is what Steve Borthwick's up to. There must be some data to recognise why the Scotland players play so well and they wouldn't get a cap for England. There must be something. And there must be a different way to analyse the crop of players England currently have.
You guys have mentioned, you've both mentioned it before, because England have such a big player pool, the physical attributes get, I think, disproportionately weighted. And actually the rugby brain and the rugby IQ and just understanding and reading of the match, and that maybe gets pushed down the thoughts. Whereas when you don't have a bigger player pool, that's the stuff that rises up to the surface a bit more.
There again, South Africa, biggest playing. Actually, it's not the biggest playing pool. Maybe it's the biggest professional playing pool.
Yeah, I bet it is the biggest professional, because they've obviously got a population of 55 million, huge swathes of which don't play rugby, but they've also got the school system and the college system and the Currie Cup system and everything feeding into it. The number of high quality players that come out of South Africa that don't get anywhere near South Africa.
So, have you finished talking about this game? Does anyone want to say anything else?
Well done, Scotland.
Fair play.
Good
win.
I can't believe we've not really spoke more about Dion. Amazing. But anyway, enough. So, this week I was at the, is it Reeves and Mills, the law firm?
Don't know.
Chandler Cunningham South? The law firm?
Yes, Chandler Cunningham South Law Firm. And I was there for a networking event. I met some people who listened to the podcast, actually. So this is a sports networking thing for all local professionals. And unfortunately, the event which I stumbled upon was the Women in Sport event. The Women in Football event, to be precise, which was precise as full of nonsense as
Phil, you go on, Jay.
I'm looking forward to hearing this.
As you would expect, right? It was just chock-a-block full of absolute cliche nonsense by the diversity industrial complex. The question I wanted to ask, a panel of five, right? And in this panel, you had like a woman. I can't even be bothered describing who these people are. They all basically totally agreed with each other. More must be done, and difficult conversations have to be had. And the compare started with, "Now we all agree this is a massive issue." I just want to put my hand up and say this is not a massive issue.
We don't all agree.
No, I'm here not to agree. I'm here not to agree. But I played the game and I just nodded along. So that was the first part. The second part was far more interesting. It was about fan engagement and how to grow different sports and how different sports have grown. So they had one guy from the LTA, which is quite interesting because obviously they've got an interesting problem.
I had some interesting conversations with LTA members this week about paddle tennis.
Well, this is the next bit, right?
So go on.
Right. I've heard about this.
So paddle tennis, otherwise known as pickleball, which is a mystery to me, but I saw it today in David Lloyd, would you believe it? So you've got the LTA guy, right? And he is
That is the most middle-class statement anyone's ever said. Oh, I saw paddleball when I was in David Lloyd today.
Yeah. So you've got the LTA guy, right? But next to him, you've got this woman promoting paddle. Or pickle, or whatever the hell it is, which I knew nothing about. So asking this guy how to spread the game, and he's basically got Wimbledon on his calendar and literally no other weapons at his disposal. And next to him is his arch competitor, and she's just telling him how they've got engagement of, like, God knows how many people. There's these paddle clubs popping up everywhere. They basically solved tennis, haven't they? All the hard bits of tennis have been removed, and you get this stupid rubber paddle, and away you go.
Yeah, you can pick it up and play almost instantly.
Yeah.
If any level of coordination, you can have a quite competitive game instantly. Unlike if you play against, which I'm not a tennis player at all, if I just picked up tennis, I'd be useless against someone who can move me around the court, can spin the ball, I'd be completely useless. But paddle, you can play against a good player and be competitive.
Football tennis is a thing now as well. There's actually, my brother takes his boys to play, and you get a tennis court Like a mini, it's like a squash court, shrunken down tennis court. Yeah. Feels like squash. You're in a, but you.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're playing that in paddle courts because I think that's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like, probably a similar thing.
Anyway, the last guy was not the last guy. The other guy was really interesting. So he is a bloke. I can't remember where he's from, but I think they were responsible for building the boxing app. Are you aware of this?
No.
So the boxing app is the scorecard. So you scan your QR code on your phone, you download the app, and as the fight goes on, you score the rounds. But everybody scores the rounds, and it gets fed into the commentators. Huh. Okay? And so the commentators are now making reference to what all the fans think. So if there's a dodgy decision, you've got this weight of opinion across the whole viewership saying, we think he won. It exposes dodgy judges almost instantly. But it's a really interesting concept in terms of both your fan engagement and also the additional content which you can create for the sport. And I thought, that is brilliant.
Mm.
What about this?
Red card decisions.
No. Exactly. Red card decisions, or even the penalty app. Like, was that a penalty? And you just download your QR.
Try yes or no.
Try, yeah. So
that's going to come down to who's got the biggest population.
Well, the problem with it is you couldn't just have, like, a scorecard and score it. I think you'd have to have, like, a live thing on, like, on your... Or your app would have to give you the options of what it was, which means if you saw a particularly nuanced thing at the breakdown, you couldn't just go penalty.
Mm.
So that wouldn't work. But if you could just say penalty, like, oh, sealing off, penalty, there'd be all this information from all these thousands, if not millions of eyeballs. And at halftime, it'd be so much more interesting. Like, well, half the population thought that that wasn't a penalty, or half the population thought that that was clearly holding on. It'd be really interesting.
Mm.
And the problem with rugby is that we don't really understand how non-rugby people view it. This would let us know. We could actually simplify the laws, so actually the things that are important we enforce, and the things we don't.
The thing is, that would probably be quite inconvenient for a lot of it when they go through. And I'm not saying, for example, the Jonathan Donty, fine with it, but fine by the protocol, it would be a red card. But it would be quite unfortunate when everyone's going, oh, yeah, clear red card. I'm unfortunate. Go, hold on, fans really don't like
this. Hang on a minute, right? Okay, I think I've got it. It's not a penalty thing. I mean, you can flash up with a penalty. It should be an enjoyment meter. Right, so when something happens like a fight, are you enjoying it? 10 and all the administrators are going, well, but they're not saying 10 for the hacker. Why is this?
That's how
they're not saying 10 for the group prayer at the end.
That's how songs are. That's how radio stations decide what songs to play.
No,
they get a load of people in an auditorium and they play music, and these people have like a dial that they can turn up to 10 or down to 0, and it's just they just get instant reaction. And they go, yeah, that tests really well.
But this is what Spotify do, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
So that's what these algorithms would do. There is something in rugby here. Like, when it all blows up, I don't know, how do we know people are paying attention because they interact with their app? There must be so many things that we could do with a matchday app which would give us so much more better data to not necessarily how to improve the game, but of what is of interest, and then sculpting the broadcast to reflect.
It's like on another level. So one cool thing about streaming and digital platforms is you get instant feedback. So for example, in the radio work that I do, we have a thing called RAJAR, which is the biggest survey that happens outside of a general election in the UK. It's the biggest survey, but it happens every 3 months. So basically, at the end of a 3-month period, and a few weeks after that, you get a picture of what it was like over the last 3 months.
Yeah.
So you're sort of looking back over your shoulder going, oh, that seemed to work. Let's have a dig into why that was. Whereas when you get digital online platforms, streaming and things like that, you get instant, live, real-time data on that was a turn-off point, that was a turn-on point, all the rest of it. But this is just taking that to another level.
So what about this? So a big event happens, right, and you instantly clip it up. So you know, there is a scrum penalty. And it looks magnificent. And then your app will say, share. And then if you share it, then they just have data that people love sharing that particular clip. The reason I like that is because I wonder, do you know when something happens like there's a high tackle or there's a bit of thuggery and people on Twitter go, I'll never watch the game ever again. How many shares did that get? Because that would be a clue as to actually what people are really liking. Because I don't think people are actually that honest, particularly on like social media, what they actually like.
Mm.
Yeah, big hit, share. Yes, this is a great idea. This is an absolutely phenomenal idea. So I can't remember who this guy is, but whoever he was, if you're listening and you're in any way involved in decision-making in rugby, like I should be, just find out what this app is for boxing, the scorecard app, and then apply it to rugby and do it today.
And install some weighbridges at the steps, at the entrance to pitches.
I love the weighbridge.
The weighbridge is my...
And the heavier side has pyrotechnics.
Did you see some frustrations around too much data this week?
England?
Not England.
Okay. No.
The Super Rugby kicked off, first round of the season, where your Highlanders...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Tim, your Highlanders had a big win.
Big win.
My beloved Hurricanes hammered the Western Force away. JB, your Blues, I can't remember seeing that.
They'll have won. The boys don't.
Hammered. Mark Evans is beloved Fijian Drua.
Oh, did they? What was the score?
34-10.
Oh, dear.
The big game, the biggest game, was the repeat of last year's final, where the Chiefs beat the Crusaders.
Yeah, that was a big win, that.
Big win.
It's mad. Scott Robertson goes, Crusaders lose.
Yes. Yeah.
Is Todd Black out of coach again?
I don't think so.
Yeah, who is the coach now?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't actually know. That's shocking.
He wasn't breakdancing after this, let's put it that way. But there was multiple... So they trialing the smart mouth guards, and there was multiple players getting taken off for HIAs when the players were kind of like looking a bit confused, and then subsequently passed the HIA and went back into play. So I've seen a video with Scott Barrett, who was a bit frustrated at it.
I bet. If I had lots of money, like Bruce Craig money, and is this way inclined, I would definitely pay off the people who control the smart mouth guard data to make sure the opposition team came off on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Sorry, boss, nothing we can do.
Set the level for those guys exactly at whatever it is, 10G, right, and everyone else is at 60G.
Yeah, in fact, turn ours off. Gone.
200G, it's got to be for one of our boys to get
to. If it's really serious, we'll know. And, like, you know, the opposition, 5G, something like that. Like, you know, they catch a ball and they're off.
Yeah, engage on the scrum, the whole front row goes off.
I mean, it's only a match of money, Matt. It's only a match of money.
So, yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be the future. And there'll be a lot of good data that can come out of this.
What about, do you know, we've got the scores, right? Well, now we've got this mouth guard data. Can we not have the G's of the hits?
The data would be available from the...
Yeah, like in tennis, they have the speed of the serve instantaneously. Every tackle, G.
G.
Bosh.
A whole new lexicon would evolve on this. Like, that guy generates some G. No one generates more G's than Chandler Cunningham South. Oh, the original G. The G Master.
The OG.
G-Shock. G-Spot.
G-Spot.
G-Spot. That's what it's called. It's called G-Spot. The G-Spot app.
Oh, my God.
What's wrong with these people that run the game?
But that is instant data on physicality, which is two things that everyone loves. Like, the one... Amazon have tried to do it, and they've tried to give us a bit more data, but it's what they got was the kicking meters. So Finn Russell has just kicked it 52.7 meters. Cheers. It's like, I know that was a long kick. I don't need to know that it was 4 meters longer than the preceding kick. It's just unnecessary. But the G-force.
That and here's another thought, right? Ken Owens puts in a giant hit. Oh, Kenny G!
G! I love it. Everyone called Ken would want to be a massive hitter.
Oh, people won't like this. Some people won't like this because it will... you can't incentivize big hits.
Well, this is it. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
We can incentivize
them. Yes, we can, and yes, we should.
We can incentivize
the game.
Them. Hey, if you don't like it, go and join Eric Anderson. Go and join him. He'll have a sport for you.
Within the laws of the game, I want the biggest hits possible.
Yeah, maybe, like... I wonder if, because every player wears GPS that will have accelerometers in between the shoulder blades, don't they? So if you don't want to, because we don't want the G-force applied to the heads. We want it applied to the players, right, the tackle areas. So put an extra bit in that or connect that up.
Yeah.
There must be a good way.
Accelerometer, that thing. I've got another one.
Mm. If you put something in people's shirts that sort of measures the hits they take, maybe, and this would appease the safety lobby, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of hits that people can take. So, you know, like Street Fighter power bar.
Oh, love it.
You have to, you've taken too many hits. Off you go. So you could take out Finn Russell. Bosh.
So I wanted, back in the day, my training aid for rugby, which I dreamt up of, was
sit mitts.
Sip mitts, yes. So, yes,
old reference for long time podcast listeners.
No, it's actually sip tips.
Right. It was a graduated system, I believe.
Yes.
Sip mitts.
Why did I not patent
sip
that?
Sip tips.
And now tips is out the game. Like there's no natural partner for me. Anyway, it was bibs that light up.
Mm, I remember you talking about this.
One of two things would happen. If you got touched in touch rugby, it would light up to avoid cheating. Or you could use it in a defensive drill. And then the coach could light up a bib or two bibs or three bibs, which are no longer allowed to tackle.
Mm.
Just be great. Just the interactive thing which coaches could do.
Not
as
hard
and when.
As well. Not difficult to do.
Be dead easy, I'm sure. I mean, I'm not sure you want to be really around car battery packs.
What's the club? Is it Exeter? I think it's Exeter. I don't know if they still do it, actually, because I haven't watched them play in a while, but they always had in their warm-up different coloured lights on chairs. On the pitch, and for the kickers, they'd sort of like pass the ball to the kicker, and then they'd flash a light, and they'd have to kick to that light fireman. It was really cool.
Mm. I've never seen that.
Yeah, I don't know if they still do it.
Slight advance on Razzie and Nienaber's red light, green light.
We should talk about Ireland.
Wales, because there was some interesting stuff just after half time from Wales.
Yeah,
most of the rest of the game was a bit to forget for them. But they really showed first 10 minutes of the second half. They came out of the blocks and did some positive things, got the penalty try, and could have scored another had things gone their way.
And I'm only going to very briefly touch on, I'm only going to mention England again briefly, but it's just to sort of double down on the point you just made. Guys like Cam Winnett, who've hardly played any senior rugby, let alone international rugby, and he has a level of competence that 50 cap England players can't seem to muster.
Mm.
So anyway, but
he looks good, Winnett. Right. I've been really impressed with.
So, look, they're a bunch of brave blokes. I massively respect what they do. They're just not good enough, are they? And I kind of feel that this is, all the Six Nations, first two games, maybe a bit of a dead cat bounce. That's all I can say, really.
They are. So they lost those first two games by a total of, 3 points, was it? Mm-hmm. But they could have been hammered by Scotland. That could have been a 50-point loss had Scotland not started giving away penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty.
Well, there's two teams in that, and Wales could have also won the game. Can you just push your leads in, just make sure they're solidly in the back?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Better. Or do you want me to unplug?
It's hundreds making, thousands making sure that this doesn't happen.
I know. I don't know what's going on. It might be my headphones, actually. No, it's definitely not my headphones. Okay, yeah. I think it's okay. It's only very faint in the background. Sorry. Anyway, it's only just happened. We're fine. We're this far in. I just don't know. I think Warren Gatland, as a man manager, he manages to squeeze more than players are capable or should be capable of giving.
Their defensive effort, Wales' defensive effort right throughout the game was huge. And it was only in the 81st minute that Ireland got the fourth try that they really wanted to get.
Yeah.
Because of that, Wales' huge, huge defensive effort.
Yeah.
Some of the Ireland stuff that was magnificent.
It is.
There's no other way to describe it. The pass from Nash to Lowe just made rugby look easy.
Yeah.
But the preceding carry by McCarthy just accentuated
that whole couple of minutes. It was great defence from Wales. Ireland were knocking on the door. It was like they managed to, within 5 to 10 metres of the Wales line, have about 15 phases, go coast to coast twice, go short, go wide, try a speculative pass, always keeping hold of the ball, retaining it, and then eventually, like you say, a great offload. It's just it's just a different level.
I don't know really what to say about this because, well, my thoughts on Wales are summed up nicely there. Fine. Just Ireland, they're just too good.
Their ability to just comfortably, as exactly you've described, comfortably attack right across the width of the pitch with multiple different runs in multiple different directions, out the back, heavy carries, offloads, and just seemingly always just retain the ball and look so comfortable doing it. It makes England put in two phases and knocking on, or Furbank headbutting it through, or Lawrence passing into touch, or Ford passing someone's feet. It just makes it look amateurish. It really, really does.
They're so good. They are so good.
And it looks like it's a done deal on this Six Nations.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, Scotland will have to win by points. Well, the main thing now is, it looks like it's Ireland's championship. Even if they lost to Scotland, they'll probably still win the championship. It's all about the back-to-back Grand Slams, which has never, ever been done in Six Nations history.
Has it not?
No, it was done about 40 years ago in the Five Nations.
Best of luck to them.
But it's an incredibly hard tournament to win, let alone to win every game of.
And they are 3 from 3 with 3 bonus points.
You'd argue that back-to-back Six Nations is actually the real Grand Slam.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because it's home and away.
You're right, actually. You're right. Ten wins. Is outstanding.
Awesome. Don't know what else to say about Ireland. I'll awesome.
Rattle through a few of their players. Andrew Porter. There's a bit of debate some people have about, was he scrummaging square or not? But I mean, what a specimen. Dan Sheehan is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Joe McCarthy is the real deal.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Tyburn, what? I mean, he went off for 10 minutes and still his work rate and his stats in the 70 minutes is more than most people get in 140 minutes. He's outrageous. Jack Crowley looks great. Jameson Gibson-Park is so good. Like, the one question is, what if you were picking a Lions side, and I'm not going down that route, just let's not pick a Lions team, but I'm thinking Finn Russell, Duane van der Merwe, and the Irish team.
Well, you'd argue, because one of the things that makes Ireland better than the sum of their parts is the cohesion. So you'd actually argue, there is an argument to say, just put the Ireland 23, just put them forward. And that's not how it works with the Lions, but you take pieces out who aren't used to that system, and particularly with Farrell being the Lions coach, just play Ireland.
Yeah, play Ireland, all of them. Well, they basically played England once, and they've almost played Wales once, I think. So Wales dominated the, was it 2013? Lions, maybe second test. They had a lot of Welsh.
2005.
When they were just coming off a Grand Slam. I'm sure England have had massive representation. Wales have had massive representation.
2013, that was quite big, particularly around the where Bod got dropped for the third test. Yeah.
Definitely a little buzz on this line. I'm going to have to try and...
Shall I unplug this? Because we...
It's that one. So
is it?
It must be the lead. Yeah, it's definitely that one, Jay. Can you hold the lead, move the lead around? Sorry, everyone. That's made it worse.
Brilliant.
I think it's because the lead is running over your Mac plug. So maybe a bit of a... electromagnetic interference going on. Live. Yeah, that was it.
Got it.
It was simple as that. Your lead was on the plug. We know now.
There we go. So, we've done with the rugby. Any more rugby? Anyone want to talk about any more rugby?
Aaron Wainwright is a hero.
Yeah, he's very good. The problem with Aaron Wainwright is I think he's much better going forward than defending. He did very well defending. In the same way Tommy Rafael is much better defending than attacking. Mm-hmm. All these Welsh players are very good at a certain thing because they're professional players. They're just not all-rounders. They're not big enough up front. They're not big enough in the front five.
Not having a scrum is...
Yeah. Any one of these guys can have a phenomenal game if that game suits them, but they're just not good enough to be always good all the time.
Mm-hmm. Agree with that.
Yeah.
Right. So we're done with the rugby.
There's no games next weekend.
Nope.
There is Rugby Europe Nations Cup Championship 2024 thing, which our prediction that Portugal would play Spain in Lisbon next weekend actually came true, even though Portugal lost to Belgium in the first round because they subsequently handily beat Poland not that impressive. But Romania away is quite impressive.
Mm. So
that is the fixture next weekend that sadly we're not going to.
Oh, well.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
So, yeah, I think we've... And there's no real games next weekend then. So... Are you ready to play us some audio? Do you want to give us some background? Or well, do you want to play us the...
I get in situations which I shouldn't get in situations.
Occasionally.
And it ended up in me sending Josh Gardner from Blood and Mud the following...
Sorry, just go back again. I missed... I need to hear the start of this. Go
just on. That I get myself in situations which you don't expect me to get into.
Right.
So it ended up with me sending Josh Gardner the following voice note. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Mr. Gardner, how are we? You'll never guess why I'm calling you. You'll literally never guess. But I want your professional opinion on something. So, my father is the head of the National Flying Club. That's not light aircraft, that's pigeon racing. And he's currently investigating the expenses around building the pigeon paper. So they've got a paper, it's 52 pages long, and he doesn't know anything about the world of publishing, particularly not niche publishing. And I said, do you know what, Dad? I know a guy. I know a guy who knows all about this stuff. So the question is this. What kind of resource would you need to put into
right.
publication?
Yeah.
So you get the idea. I want to give a massive shout out to Josh. Josh Gardner, God.
For, I thought it was going to be some spicy.
For enormously helping
spicy
out.
Rugby, me, helping spicy out rugby. Spicy rugby culture war stuff. Right.
What a good bloke. What a good bloke. Despite what is perceived to say, despite all of our perceived differences, went above and beyond to help me out. Trying to say a racing pigeon paper for
great.
My dad.
Now all that would need to happen is for everyone, and you, as you've just done, everyone to acknowledge that we have many more similarities than our differences, and it's okay to disagree about.
Do you want
stuff?
To know something about the racing pigeon, which is the paper owned by the National Flying Club, which is growing up, my dad's always kept pigeons. He's always been mad into pigeons. Same way that I'm mad into rugby. That's probably where I get this obsession from, right? And now because he's retired, he's the president, maybe? I don't know his official title, but he's a decision maker in the National Flying Club, right? And they own a paper. How many subscribers do you think they get to a weekly pigeon paper?
Is this it's UK?
UK only. It might be UK and beyond, to be fair.
In the dozens or hundreds.
Is it in physical form or digital as well?
Physical form.
Physical form, okay.
I think you can get it digitally now, actually, so okay. maybe it's both.
Okay, if it's physical only, I'm going to go 1,500.
Yeah, physical actually push it up slightly just because... Well, yeah, up more than 50 to 100. Yeah, 500 to 1,000, that kind of range.
9,000.
Really?
9,000 wow. people buy this thing. Can wow. you imagine that? So he's been landed with this...
Weekly.
Weekly.
Like what? Weekly. What changes from week to week?
Well, this is it, isn't it? Right, so 52 pages of weekly pigeon content for £1.60 a go. I mean, that is remarkable value. I know bits about pigeons. I couldn't fill up 52 pages... every single week. But
I know the clientele probably won't like this, but I would say there's an opportunity for a fun send up of a page 3.
Well,
check out this bird.
Yes, page 3 bird. Well, this is it. So I was listening to the problems that the Flying Club are facing, and I was thinking, like, this is definitely a question for the podcast, because we talk all the time about how do we improve rugby. Well, there's actually a bit of sport out there which we can literally improve tomorrow. We have the ear of the president. It's like, well, so what could you do? So what do you think their three sources of revenue are?
Membership?
No, actually, that wasn't listed as one. But
okay.
I assume you would have to be
entry into events that they put on?
Yes. So they've got one race. It's a one loft race, right? So what happens is you send your bird to one loft, you start the season, you get your bird, you send it to one loft, and that is in Norfolk, would you believe it? And then that bird is trained in that loft with all the other birds. You pay like 500 quid to send your bird.
I'm imagining like a Rocky montage here when you say trained in
exactly.
the loft.
Well, this is it, right? This is exactly it. And there, well, do you know, I'll come back to that. And then these birds get taken away to France and then released. And because they're all going to the same loft, then whoever's bird comes back first wins the whole prize pot. Mm. So you can win a lot of money. Now, do you know who's, bring it back to rugby, you know whose father is employed by Pigeon Lofts?
I mean, this is great. This is to go on the list with Luke Narroway.
Luke Narroway, no.
Dad's a butcher.
Nick Kennedy.
No.
Mum's an author.
Miss Johnny May's mum.
No.
Taught Ed Sheeran guitar.
It's on that list. What have we got?
Don Armand's dad.
Don Armand's dad.
Yeah, so he looks after a loft in South Africa, which is the million pound race or million dollar race. So that's what the prize fund is for doing this thing. Now, when I heard that there was a single loft in Norfolk, my mind's not, well, what else happens here? Like, is there a
World Series?
Well, like, do you not think that is an awesome opportunity?
F1. You could have teams like F...
Tim, right. Okay, so I was thinking, well, if they're all coming out to the loft, why have you not got the pigeon fanciers who've sent the birds to the loft all coming to have some beers and a marquee and an event to celebrate your biggest race of the year? Why is that not a thing? That should be like their biggest event. It should be like F1. It should be, I mean, it's not going to be like F1, but like
not
you've
quite.
Got the vendors of pigeon-based paraphernalia.
Can you track them so you can kind of have commentary off source?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. So this is another thing which I've got. They've got this tracking technology now. But of course, it's so expensive, so not everyone can have it and whatnot. So, well, why don't they just have one bird per race with it on so you roughly know where all the birds are? Roughly. So what do you reckon the other sources of income are?
Okay, so got...
Do they issue licences or anything like that?
Well, they've got the paper, they've got this race, and there's one other source. And you already know it, Phil, because I've told you.
Calendars.
You did tell me.
Nope. Oh, I've...
Stash, not Stash.
Stash, yeah.
Stash.
The pigeon rings.
Pigeon rings.
They sell rings for 20 pence a go. I'm like, Dad, why are you not branding these rings? So it could be 20 pence for a normal
ring. Are they big enough to brand?
Yeah, absolutely. They're like that. So I was thinking, like, who is the most famous pigeon in the world? I don't know. Got no idea, right? But there must be somewhere, like, the most famous pigeon in the world. We don't have any idea what its ring is. So that ring should be worth something. It should be branded up. So if you love your loft, you presumably would want to brand your loft. And like the medieval knights have your own coat of arms on these rings. And that surely would mean something. And instead of being 20 pence, surely it'd be like £1. Or you want golden rings for £5. I mean, they spend a lot of money on pigeons. Why would you not put a fancy ring on there and double, triple, quadruple your profit?
Presumably, like horse races, you breed like...
Yeah, absolutely.
Pigeon studs?
Absolutely. Stock birds.
Yeah, so that's another way they make money, isn't it? I might have got a rapid pigeon.
That is absolutely true. That's exactly what they do. Like, so they've got all of these things which they could do, and obviously they're not doing many of them. Like, they've not got a podcast. And I was like, Dad, you realise I've got the world's only podcast that could do both rugby and pigeon racing? You know, the name is ubiquitous here.
Neville Southall to host it.
Do you know,
as a pigeon racing podcast.
I want that.
Exactly. Well, you know, Neville Southall used to come around my house when we were younger.
You've mentioned it before. That's why I mentioned it just then.
Mm. Neville Southall, a resident of London. No, massive pigeon racing fan. Do you know who else is a massive pigeon racer?
Don Armand's dad. Now I know that. Yeah. Now, but
Everton player, historic Everton player, hard man.
Okay, Norman Whiteside.
Duncan Ferguson.
Duncan Ferguson loves his pigeons.
Wow.
Loves his pigeons. So, if you race pigeons and want to get in touch,
and now I'm just trying to think of a name. We've already come up with a name for your little rugby, or our listeners came up with a name for your little spin-off podcast with Mark Evans,
Egonomics, which is out next Tuesday.
Egonomics,
I listened to the
rugby.
First one.
It's good, isn't it?
Very much enjoyed it. Yeah.
Egonomics. Now I'm trying to think of a pigeon.
Egg chasers, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, egg chasers still works. Yes, that's your point. Yeah.
So don't get those two podcasts confused.
Egg Chasers Rugby, Egg Chasers Pigeons.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for a new...
Yeah. It's amazing, though. So if you want a little insight into how rugby works, I guess, or how any sport works, which is entrenched, just go to one of these minority sports like pigeon racing and you pitch an idea and it's always a no. It's always a no. So the no for the branded rings, for example... Despite all the yeses which you get and the fact they might save the sport because it will drive revenue, would be, well, they might recognise the ring and not return the birds. There's a culture in pigeon racing of returning stray birds that you get. But if you've got a bird which you know is a good one, why would you give it back? Well, that's the only downside. I mean, there's lots of upside. But that's the sort of thing that the people who are already involved in sports, no matter what it is, tend to say no to absolutely everything. It's very difficult.
I imagine pigeon racing, like rugby, is very traditionalist.
Yeah. And also
it's like trying to turn an oil tanker around it.
Yeah.
It takes a long time.
Another thing is they don't talk about the history. Pigeon racing has got a phenomenal history. Like, if you think about all of the homing pigeons during the war, it is a really interesting story. Like, the lofts which they used to communicate in the Second World War is one of the most... it was one of the most reliable ways of getting messages home. So there's all sorts to go up.
I love it. Any other business from you, Phil?
No, nothing. Nothing I can think of now. My brain's just full of pigeon.
My AOB would be...
Schwab.
Schwab. My AOB would be... I've said it before on the podcast, but I finally finished season 2 of The Bear. It's so good.
I've never even heard of it.
It's so good.
Is that the cooking... show.
Yeah, it's about a guy who's like an amazing chef.
Oh.
And he goes back home to take over his brother's sandwich shop in Chicago. And it's absolutely awesome.
Interesting.
Season 2 of it is brilliant.
So I've started watching Billions. Quite enjoy that.
Yeah.
It's reasonable.
I like Wendy. She's ace.
Who's Wendy?
The main one in Billions.
Is that the wife?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm still sort of...
Paul Giamatti's awesome. He's the main guy. No, not Damian Lewis. He's the husband of Wendy.
I've got to say, I've got a real thing for the psychologist one.
Yeah, that's Wendy.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, my word. She blows my mind.
Yeah, that's when she's she's awesome. She's great.
There you go.
I mentioned it on the podcast very briefly a few weeks ago, but I'm reading... probably three quarters of the way through The Spy and the Traitor, which is an incredible real story of a KGB double agent.
Wow.
Who was stationed in Britain and passing secrets from inside the Soviet Union to Britain during the 70s, 80s.
Fuck.
And it's unbelievable. It's a phenomenal book.
Ooh.
I would really recommend it.
Do you know, I met a guy this week who wrote a book. He wrote the channel himself, well, with a friend, I guess. But then he also wrote a book about Ranulph Fiennes also doing it. And he sent me a signed copy of his book and a little note in it this week. And back to rugby, I got in touch with him through, one, Jackson Ray, because they work together. And as soon as I said, our office is in Huddinghill, he's like, well, one of our film managers is in Huddinghill. And instantly we went for coffee. And there nice. We go.
I presume the Jackson Ray brogues are up in the upstairs.
Well, he's not been to Manchester yet, so we're going for lunch next week or week after. But yeah, all very exciting stuff.
Very good.
I think that's it. Yeah. So you got a book, you got a TV show, and you've got a new sport.
I'll be updating you with. Pigeon updates as the season progresses, because we're right on the verge of a brand new season.
Wow. Yeah. Like F1. Does it follow the F1 season?
Yeah. I tell you what, there are some peculiar characters. There are some peculiar characters. It's a strange old sport, but it's an endearing one.
Yeah, I bet. Right, wherever you get your podcasts, hit subscribe. Patreon.com/eggchasers for more. We must do another episode of that soon.
Yes.
We really must. That's on the hit
list. Next week.
And other than that, let the boys end.
Let the boys end.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.